Hey everyone, if you have not yet, please like and subscribe to the Advisor today. Back with us is Tom Cronin from Australia. So I have a story to tell. So I have his book, The Portal, behind me, and The Stillness Project in T-Rex's Mouth. And I moved into my new space. And it was my first night, and I had this bookshelf set up, and there's no fans, there's nothing, there's no air movement. And I'm sleeping, and all of a sudden I hear this bang, and I scared the living shit out of me for one. So I get up and I'm like, what is going on? And I take my phone and I'm searching around. I have the flashlight on, and I look on the floor, and the portal had fallen off my shelf. It was on the ground, and I took it as a sign that I had to read the damn book finally because I hadn't yet. And so I spent the next day on my round chair reading the entire book, and it was absolutely beautiful. And Tom is here today to talk about it. So he's a coach, a meditation teacher, and a speaker, and the founder of the Stillness Project and co-author of this amazing book. It's so good to see you again.
Yeah, great to be back. I'm looking forward to this chat today.
Yeah, what a crazy story. Like, it was like, you got to read me already. It's like, what, how could I have got like more of a sign?
The universe is fascinating how it sends the signals and signs. It's really quite a remarkable field of intelligence that's working with us, working for us, and I guess that's something we could touch on today.
Yeah, and I couldn't put it down. Like, I was just so inspired by it, the stories in it. So why don't we talk about it?
Yeah, the film and the book came together with this underlying premise, which was based on my story, that I had this major crisis. And that crisis, which was really a pivotal turning point in my life, where I was in a really dark, dark place, a lot of anxiety, panic attacks, depression, addiction, suicidal ideation, and just really struggling with whether I wanted to go on with life. I really was in a bleak, bleak place. And it was in that moment, and this is really like a breakdown or breakthrough moment that we get often in our lives, a bifurcation point. And it was in that time I found meditation, and it was kind of like almost like these divine epiphanies and guidances from the universe that led me to that in the time when I was probably most open and receptive to it. Because before that, many people had suggested I learn meditation, and I just wasn't ready. I wasn't hearing them. There was something just not happening in my world that led me to go down that path until I was at this sort of breaking point, and then the universe had led me to the idea that I learned meditation, and so then that was what was the turning my life around. And so these days now, fast forward, I've been teaching people all over the world and work with some of the biggest companies and have a film and book out because of that bleak time, but also because of the shift that I went through as a result of that bleak time. I almost had to get to that darkest point before I could possibly make that change. And not that we want to wait to that, it's just that a lot of people need something as severe as that before they end up changing the way they do things, the way they think, the way they start relating to themselves or the world. And so then I made this film and book with that sort of as the central theme, that crisis isn't a way of punishing you because you're a bad person. It's an opportunity for us to learn and grow. And usually, in our darkest times, if we get to that level of adaptive capacity, it's when we usually do something to change what we're doing. And it might be that we go on a retreat. It might be that we sort of sign up to a coach or a breathwork session or go to a conference or pick up a book. Or, it might be something that cues us to start looking at ways to get out of this dark night. And the analogy I like to use is that if we walk into a dark room, the first thing we do is fumble around trying to find the light switch. So when we're in dark, try looking for light. When you had that bang in your room, the first thing you did was go and look for the light. And so when there's disturbance, when there's some trauma, when there's some darkness, what we want to do is look for light. And so that's really ultimately what crisis is for. And that's what we made the book and the film about, was finding six stories that all had crisis to move through that to change their lives.
Not many people find the portal when they turn on their light.
No, that's
That's
right.
amazing though. As I was saying before we hit record, like it like we talked about the catapult effect. Like trauma causes people to have equal force on the other side of that. So it typically projects you into this, you know, that's how healers are born, essentially. That's how we learn. We're like, it's almost like camp, you know, it's not a fun camp, but you're being trained to take on the rest of your life from these crisis points. And I feel like there's a lot of people going through dark night of the soul moments right now in the world.
Yeah, and you know the analogy I like to use is if we want to propel something forward, like in a slingshot or a arrow in a bow, for it to be propelled forward quite aggressively or fast, we have to actually pull it back first. And when we think of the word setback, a setback will pull us back, but from there, like you said, that polarity of then slinging us forward into a whole new rapid trajectory of transformation and change. And I see that all the time. People come to my retreats or my workshops, and they're in a really, we'll always ask them, what's inspired you to come here? And it's like, things will be pretty bad for them a lot of the times. Not always for everyone, but a lot of people will come to me in a state of, I've got terrible insomnia, or I've got a really bad anxiety. I had one guy who was a professor at Sydney University, hadn't worked for 6 months because he was extremely depressed and anxious and had mental health leave. And so that sort of set back, and then they learn meditation, or they come on retreat or do some work, and then they have this huge propulsion forward. And quite often what I find is that people go through that, like myself included. I didn't go and learn meditation to become a meditation teacher. I learned meditation to alleviate the pain that I was going through. But over time, that was so profoundly changed by it that I propelled myself into becoming a teacher and a coach and a speaker and bringing this to the world. So we tend to find that quite often is the case.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you set out to save yourself, and then you save yourself, and then you want to help other people save themselves.
Yeah, most people I find that I work with that are in that conscious leadership space are usually wanting to go into the process of sharing what they've discovered that worked for them. That's why
Yeah.
you might get I think it's the Seventh-day Adventists or the Mormons that knock on your door on a Sunday morning with the watchtower. For them, that was the thing that was so powerful at making their life better that they naturally just want to go and knock on people's doors and say, you should try this as well. And don't necessarily want to go down that path specifically. But what we tend to find is that there's a three-step process in our journey. One is that we are a seeker. So that's where we're in the dark room looking for the light. So we're seeking, seeking, seeking. And then in the process of seeking, eventually we find the light switch. So that's where people find meditation, or they find the Quakers, or they find, breath work, or they find something that changes their life. It might be turning vegan, or might be turning carnivorian, whatever it is that completely transforms them. As they go from seeker to finder, and then the next progressive step for most people, not always, but they go on to sharer, and that is where, oh my goodness, I have to share what I found while I was seeking. And then they want to go into that process of looking at ways that they can share the insights that they've had, because there's a natural inclination for all of us to want to share something that's valuable to us, that is an insight or a piece of knowledge. And so the Portal film and the book is a classic example of that, me wanting to share what I found and let other people know that there's this possibility as well.
Yeah, do you want to talk about some of the stories? Do you want to talk about the six stories?
Yeah, so we've got Ronnie, who is such an incredible story. Ronnie was and is still a beautiful, enlightened man, one of the most beautiful, radiant souls. He's a rabbi, and he had locked-in syndrome, which is that he had the inability to use any of his body. He couldn't move his body other than blinking his eyelids. That was how it first started out. The only way he could communicate was one blink for no, I think it was, and two blinks for yes. And that was his only form of communication. And he was a highly revered, rabbi in his community, beautiful family, and very successful leader in the community. But then all of a sudden he had this stroke and his whole body was locked up. But over time he learned to not see that as a limitation and not see that as a punishment, but to actually transform through that. And stillness and meditation played such an integral role in his ability to realize that he's not the physical form, he's the consciousness that pervades and permeates through the physical form. And that doesn't get affected as to whether the body's incapacitated or not. And he
Right.
really aligned with that. And then we have Zui, who's a beautiful soul, an incredible meditation teacher now, mindfulness coach, who, again, someone that went from seeker finder to sharer. And she had a really difficult time as a Vietnamese refugee living up, growing in a very poor area of Philadelphia, and then getting accepted on a scholarship to Harvard. And things were really difficult and dark for her in that time, as she felt this huge incongruency with those two worlds. And that's when she found meditation, and that was a big shift for her. And that freed her of the trappings of the socio-economic background that she kind of was identifying with, and realized that she's an infinite soul of divine intelligence that's currently going through that trajectory for that reason of awakening. And so then we have beautiful Dr. Jim Doty, who has recently passed, unfortunately, a wonderful man who was a doctor, and he lost all of his wealth. So another crisis. We have different crises with different themes. Refugees, we have dysfunctional bodies, or the loss of body through locked-in, and Doty's was economic. So his was the loss of all of his wealth. And how does he transform through that? And meditation played a big part for him in overcoming that sense of loss and attachment to physical wealth. And then we have Heather, who was quite a complex story, because she had a couple of crises. One was this child abuse through the relationship in her family. And then she was on her trajectory to become an Olympic athlete. And she was the winner of the USA 400 meter race. And from there was really on her way to going to represent America in the Olympics. And then she jumped off a cliff at a summer camp into the water, and she broke her back. And so then all of those dreams were stripped away from her. And that was really the only thing that she was holding on to, as a sense of identity. So that was a really big crisis that she found meditation played a big part in helping her free herself through that. And we have also Buddha, who is just a wonderful man, and everyone got very enamored by him. And he was a US Marine, and he obviously had extreme PTSD and went through a really dark time with his, I guess, the effects of being in war. And meditation really helped him free from the PTSD that he was struggling with. And he's a very successful actor now, doing great in the acting world. And then the last one is Amandine, who was with the United Nations, and she was a human rights lawyer. And she realized that she was riddled with PTSD for working in the front lines with the United Nations. And then meditation for her played a really integral role in healing herself of the PTSD. And interestingly, it was so profound for her that she gave up her legal profession and became a yoga meditation teacher, of all things. So
That's
they're the six
yeah, and
stories.
the photos that you have in the book are just beautiful. It illustrates the story so well. Like I honestly felt like I could feel the emotion. Like I'd read the story and then look at the photo of them and just feel the emotion from the story.
Yeah, it was very moving stories, and they were really so eloquent and open to sharing, which was really beautiful, and made that a really special journey for the reader and the viewer of the film to go through.
Yeah, and you have the yeah, exactly. You have the film too. So there's something that you said on social media recently, and it made me chuckle. It was something to do with if you can't focus, meditate. If you still can't focus, meditate some more. I don't know. It was something like that, and I just giggled. I'm like, that's brilliant. Yeah. So what does meditation do to the mind that like allows people to transform like that?
Firstly, we have to understand that a lot of people give up on meditation because they think they're having thoughts and they can't still their mind. And it's a journey. Meditation's not a destination. We don't think, I didn't arrive at a destination without meditation, therefore it wasn't very successful. And I get that a lot, because we're so conditioned to think that there's an outcome. Everything in our life is about outcomes. And with meditation, it's a process, and it's an ongoing process. And I've been meditating for 30 years, and I still have busy meditations. I still have thoughts in meditation. But we're not concerned in our tradition with what type of experience you have in your meditation. What we're interested in is, how is that affecting your life outside of your meditation? And you can have a busy meditation with lots of thoughts in it, And what we suggest is just take it as it comes. And then
Right.
observe how you feel after your meditation. And what we tend to find, particularly with the Vedic meditation or transcendental meditation, where we have a mantra, rather than just trying to force the mind to be empty. But when we have the mantra, what we tend to find is that just the repetition of that mantra for 20 minutes with your eyes closed and allocating that time to not being on your phone, not doing emails, not listening to podcasts, but just to be in that space, eyes closed, just repeating the mantra. And if there's thoughts, there's thoughts. If there's no thoughts, there's no thoughts. But what we find is that regardless of the experience within the meditation, we find that there is a de-excitement of the nervous system and the physiology outside of the meditation. And so we tend to find, even though it might not be a deep and still meditation, we still feel quite calm, quite peaceful, quite grounded, and ready for more activity. And
Yeah,
activity
I
is
was
an
thinking
interesting one.
rested. The word rested came to mind.
Yeah, absolutely. We feel rested. It's a really great reprieve for the nervous system and the body. So meditation, ultimately, in many ways, it changes us, but the main one, what we tend to find, is that it gives us this capacity to be less disturbed by circumstances, to be in the world and less emotionally turned over and go through upheaval with each single change that happens throughout our day. And just to be more observant, more witnessing, less entangled into it emotionally, and more liberated and more sovereign in our state, which is where we want to be.
So I know when I have TM and I have a mantra, and when my teacher was getting that mantra, where does it come from? Because she asked me a bunch of questions. Apparently it's locked up in the secret portal somewhere. No one can know the mantras. Where does that come from?
Yeah, look, there's a series of mantras, and different teachers will allocate them for different reasons.
Okay.
The way I was trained and the way I deliver the mantras based upon age categories. So, depending
Okay.
on your age, they might ask other things around, where you're at energetically in your life, and what type of dosha you are. That's what type of Ayurvedic body type and things like that. But personally, for me, when I pass on the mantra to my students, it's quite specific around their age and how old they are when they're learning the technique.
So why aren't we supposed to tell anybody our mantra?
I think there's two reasons for that. One is that mantra, when you repeat the mantra, the beautiful thing about the mantra in this particular type of meditation, because there's lots of different mantras like Om Namah Shivaya and Om Mani Padme Hum. Now, the point of those mantras is to keep repeating the mantra with your mala beads. Where's my mala beads? Oh, they're not on today. To repeat the mantra with your mala beads and to go around the 108 mala beads. And so you're counting the mala beads or moving along the mala beads, you're repeating the mantra out loud. And this is what we call mantra meditation. Now, with our meditation, we use specific mantras that are for transcending. That is, the mantra is a vehicle to lure the mind subtler and subtler and subtler to the point where it's so subtle and so faint that the mind surrenders the mantra at this point, and it transcends the mantra and transcends thinking. So that transcendence is only possible when the mantra is so faint that we're not holding on to it. But if we're holding on to the mantra and to our mala beads and going through this repetition, then we're not going to let go of the mantra. We're going to hold on to the mantra. And now this is mantra meditation, and we're not transcending. So for that reason, we don't want to write it down or talk about it, have a whole, discussion around the mantra with your friend at a cup of tea. Because next time you go to meditate, your mind will go to the form or phenomenon where you wrote the mantra down or where you shared the mantra. Now there's a whole drama and story and form around the mantra when the point of the mantra is to take you to formlessness. So the mantra
Right. So
is
it has no
linked.
meaning, really. It's like you're completely detached. It's just the word with no meaning. Because if I
It's
sat
a.
here and if I said apple to myself, I'm going to picture the color, I'm going to picture the shape, I'm going to be like, oh, it's shiny. And then I'm going to get hungry and I'm going to want to take a bite of it. And so, yeah, I get that. It's like there's no meaning to it. So it felt so sacred when I got it. I like put it in a book and she showed it to me and she's like, you gotta remember this. And then we went over it and she's like, you're not allowed to tell anybody. And Yeah, it for me, it added to it. It made it feel so sacred, and it's like it's mine.
Yeah, I think the second reason why we want to preserve it to ourselves is just firstly that relationship we develop with it. It's just a beautiful resonance that has this quality in its subtlety to take the mind into the subtle. But also, when we just hand it out and just give it to people, hey, you should use this, it's out of context. They don't have the full experience of learning the entire knowledge and philosophy and everything around the actual technique. And I can
Right.
understand a lot of people like, well, that's just secrecy, and why do you keep it private? Why don't we just all have them and share it all out to the world? But what we tend to find, in my own personal experience as a teacher and as a student, is that my ability to really integrate this meditation and understand this meditation and appreciate this meditation and value this meditation on a daily basis after 30 years comes down to the extensive process that I went through to learn the technique. And the
Right.
depth of the tradition, the depth of the knowledge, the depth of the philosophy, all added layers and layers of depth to the experience. And I think without that, here's a sound, off you go. Why don't you just close your eyes and repeat it? There's a lack of appreciation, lack of understanding, a lack of experience, a lack of checking in with the teacher over the 4 sessions. And yeah, it just gets devalued very quickly and unappreciated. And then the students rarely, in situations like that, would ever continue on with their practice because it's just not valued and understood.
Yeah. Well, I can say this. There's no other meditation that I've ever done that has ever gotten me as deep as TM Hats. Since we've been talking and been doing the show, I've started again. And it is the deepest form of rest that I get during the day. Like I look forward to it. My body craves it and I sit down and at certain points, I feel like I'm floating in the air and I can't feel my body. And those are the best ones. When you can't feel anything, you're like, oh my God, it just feels so good. And as you said, other days, it's like everything is affecting me, but I still feel rested after. So I remember my teacher saying to me, it's all good. Like every part of it is good. If you're sitting down and if you're just re-saying it in your head, if you're grabbing onto it and letting it go, everything is good. There's no bad thing about it. So there's nothing to lose.
Yeah, we two things. We get a very high retention rate of meditators using this practice. Even if they drop off for a little while, they still come back to it. And that's because it feels so good. We like to
Yeah.
do things in life that feel good. That's why we drink hot chocolates and eat ice cream and watch Netflix, because we like doing things that we enjoy. And so if we have a meditation that's really uncomfortable, really difficult, it's very hard to integrate that. And interestingly, I was teaching some corporate CEOs yesterday, a small group in a private session. Now, I wasn't teaching them TM, or Vedic meditation, because I was only there for 1 hour and I couldn't give
Okay.
them the full experience. So I said to them, what I'm going to teach you is a breath meditation. And this was where they focus on the breath moving through the nostrils. And one of the gentlemen afterwards, he said, it's really interesting going through that again with you, because 2 years ago I was going through a depressive time and I did that meditation every day and I tried to do it nearly all day, every day, for over a year and a half. And he said the strange thing was that I thought I would find it easier, or I thought I would find it enjoyable after time as I got used to it. He said the entire time it never got easier and it never got enjoyable. And
Okay.
I said that's because it's an uncomfortable practice. When we use force to try to stop the mind doing something that it wants to do, because it wants to think, and it wants to analyze, it wants to process, it wants to forecast, it wants to remember. But if we just use force and try to tie it down and stop it moving, then we're going to have friction, because we've got one thing wanting
Yes.
to do one thing and you trying to stop it from doing something. It's like trying to tie a teenager up and stop them from going out one night. It's
Yeah,
going to
good
cause
luck.
trouble. Yeah, good luck, right? Whereas what we use is charm. We use the charm of the mantra. And then the mantra is so charming for the mind. But the beautiful thing is that mantra and its charm pulls the mind to the greatest charm of all, which is transcendence, because this is pure consciousness, which is bliss. And so when we transcend, we have this beautiful washing over of bliss. And that makes it a very compelling meditation to integrate on a daily basis, because a lot of my students say it's the thing that I look forward to the most in my day.
Yeah, I can relate to that. And you just like made me think of why I don't like certain breath work. Like, you're right, it's hard. And I'm like forcing my body to do something. And then I'm like, yeah, it's like stressing me out. And yeah, with the TM, you just sit there and you're just repeating it and the thoughts come and go, but it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. Yeah, it's just
Yeah, we
that
had a
feeling of bliss.
yeah, I was on a retreat last week actually, and they one of the meditation sessions they took us through was this breath hold and breath counting. Breathe in for 7 and breathe out for 8, and it was interesting because it was contrarian to what my body wanted to do, particularly as I wanted to get into a deeper state of meditation. So when we're in deep states of meditation, the oxygen requirement is almost zero, because we're deep, and then we don't have many fluctuations mentally, physically, or on the nervous system. And so therefore the oxygen, which is fuel within the body, isn't required. So if we go for a
Right.
run, we need more fuel, so we take bigger breaths. So the kind of conundrum with this meditation was that as we were trying to de-excite, they were forcing us to breathe more air, when in
Yeah.
actual fact the body didn't need or want more air. So this became an uncomfortable experience, like you say, and I was like, this doesn't make sense. It's not actually helping me get into a more relaxed state. I'm already in a relaxed state, which is why I don't have much oxygen. But to then force my body to have more oxygen when it doesn't need it will actually be a bit conflicting for the body, and it causes a bit of attention, I find.
Yeah. It's the one thing, like my body knows how to breathe, you know, like we were all born, we already know how to breathe. So it's like, just like our body digests on its own, right? We know how to breathe. And I know there is a time and place for breath work. And I mean, I've used it in yoga and like for certain things, but yeah, it's just, like you said, that resistance is it's there for sure.
For sure.
Yeah. So where can people find out more about your coaching, your meditation program, and the book?
Yeah, so most of that you'll be able to go to tomcronin.com, my website, and you'll find all of the retreats and meditation courses, and there'll be a section there on the portal where they can go to the portal film and the portal book. There's another website for that. You can find it on my website, tomcronin.com.
Amazing. Do you have anything else you want to leave the audience with today?
I think just the importance of, in our world that is so highly mentally stimulating, where we have so much cerebral activity going on, where we think a lot, we talk a lot, we listen a lot, and there's this natural, very top-heavy existence that we're in right now, and we're very disconnected from our body. We're very disconnected to the earth because of this very cerebral existence. We really have idolized thinking, ruminating, contemplating, and so much of our world is around watching Netflix, listening to podcasts, reading books, scrolling through social media, talking, listening. It's all centered into this field here, and that leaves us really disconnected to this beautiful biological system that is a wonderful mechanism that we need to give a little bit more attention to, but also to the earth. So getting grounded in the earth, spending more time in nature, and walking, particularly barefoot if you can, with the earth. But I think one of the things that we can do to get out of this cerebral intensity is to meditate, and to help us get this decluttering of the thoughts, the cacophony of the noise in our head, and to just use meditation practices. And it comes back to that post I did on my Instagram a couple of days ago, which is that I can't even remember what it was. Something like, if you have a busy mind, meditate, and if you still have a busy mind, meditate more. So just
Yeah.
making sure that, really, I can't emphasize it enough, the importance of just allocating a portion of your day, 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes, to find some form of meditation. Ideally, I find Vedic or transcendental meditation a really easy and accessible tool, but if not, find another tool of meditation that allows you just to sort of give your mind a bit of a break from thinking.
Yeah, amazing. Thanks for being here today. It was so good to see you again.
Yeah, likewise. Always good to have a conversation. It's very inspiring.
Yes. And I hope we inspired our audience today. You guys, if you're struggling to meditate, meditate more. Just like Tom said, listen to Tom, check out his website, learn about meditation, stillness. There's so much power in stillness. And if you're struggling, just wait for that catapult moment, you guys. You're going to go back and then you're going to catapult into something amazing. I promise it's coming. Hang on. Till next time. Take care, everyone.